WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into football season, which gives me a chance to visit with old friends and new. You know, when the guys are out in Cincinnati, you know, like, and I don't think I'm getting out there this year eating a chili and getting the indigestion, but I can't get together and have crab cakes with guys on the crab cake tour, you know, the way I'd like to with this guy. Usually he's doing something good for the world, certainly talking inside football. And it's hard for me to say this, Solly, the defending AFC champion, Cincinnati Bengals, as you got your little Bengal helmet out there. How are you, brother? It's good to hate on you guys two more times this year. Now that, like, what's going on in this division? It's crazy what's happened here.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, everybody's locked up right around 2-2, and the Steelers have gone the other way. You know, they're gone. So, look, you know this is going to be a hotly contested division. No team is perfect. But look, it's still a blue-collar division, black and blue. It's going to be physical. It's going to be tough. And every game is going to come down to the wire. And I've told people, as long as Lamar Jackson is playing in Baltimore, they've got a chance. As long as Joe Burrow is playing in Cincinnati, they've got a chance. And as long as Mike Tomlin is in Pittsburgh and they keep putting the defense out there, they're going to have a chance. So none of these teams are going to go away. And I think whenever we play each other in the AFC North, you know it's going to be a dogfight.
Look at that shirt on you, man. Oh, you got your jungle gear and your Zubaz and old school. And where's your whiteout? I don't see where. They look like albino Bengals. What was going on with that?
Hey, it was pretty cool. You know, there is an albino tiger running around the jungle somewhere. So we can get away with the whiteout. I thought the unis looked pretty sweet, by the way. I think you kind of have to, if you were to let the bias leave your body, I think you would have to lean into that a little bit.
Before we get to on the field, I'm going to have a little uniform fun with you because Luke and I could, because I'm old like you, right? So to me, yeah. I posted up a little Kenny Ander. I posted up like 1970 Booby Clark, you know, I want B-E-N. What's on your shirt? On a helmet, right? Old school. And then I remember when Collinsworth put on that helmet, I thought that was the sexiest helmet. We weren't in the same division. But the Colts played the Bengals in 80-81 when Collinsworth was a great player, you know, early in his career, especially. He was a sort of sensational player at that point. He came in, he was the exciting player. He's guess he's coming back this week. But then they've had that uni forever and ever and ever. And I know the Brown family didn't change a lot of things, not even Marvin, right? But like they've had that uni a long, long time. Some folks don't even know. I don't think my wife's familiar with the old 70s uni.
Yeah, you got to go back to the 80s when this helmet, I think 1980 was the first year that helmet debuted. But you're right. Prior to that, from 69 to like 79, it was just the word Bengals on the side of the helmet. And that's because Paul Brown, as you well know, is the father of the Cleveland Browns. They're named after him. Paul Brown, the father, he's the only guy to start two NFL franchises. Not just one, but two. He did that in Cleveland with the Cleveland Browns.
And we were the benefactors of that, by the way.
You are the benefactors of that. So you're part of the Paul Brown tree.
Ooh, well, let's talk about the team on the field. First things first, your thoughts on first, you know, blown leads at home. Unraven-like, end of the game, and you can give all credit to Tua, and you know I know you guys saw him in not such a good way last week, and you can give all credit to Josh Allen and all that, but they do have a lot of splaining to do around here right now.
Yeah, hey, blown coverages, allowing guys to get open, and you're giving up deep pass. Look, the defense ranked dead last in the NFL, dead last against the pass, and this despite – look, last year there was the excuses of everybody's hurt. Now you have a Marlon Humphrey, you have a Marcus Peters, and you've got a first-round pick in Kyle Hamilton. And you listen.
He spent a lot of money on Marcus Williams, right?
And yeah, Marcus Chuck Williams, Clark, you
know, yeah. They've got good players on the field. Brandon Stevens is a good player.
That's right. Now it's about performing. It's about execution. And I've got to be honest with you. Coach Harbaugh decides that he's going to go for the touchdown instead of kick the field goal, and he falls on the side of analytics, and I get it. I like Coach John Harbaugh. I think he's done some wonderful things, and I do think he's used analytics to make his team better. However, that decision, even the analytics says it nets 74% chance of winning if you score a touchdown, 70% chance of winning if you kick the field goal. You're all talking about he's right. It gave him a better chance, but by 4%, man, you better kick that field goal, instill your team with some confidence, some feel good moments after a 93-yard drive. You want to pay that off. You hadn't scored any points in the second half up to that point. In fact, you still didn't score any points in the second half. 3 points would have gone a long way to help them there. I'm not sure it would have worked because the defense is that bad, because Buffalo got the ball and went right down the field. So I really do think if Coach Harbaugh was being transparent fully, he would say, look, I wanted the touchdown because I didn't think we could stop him.
And you know what? I was right. I was, yeah. You know, like, what? Yeah, listen.
He was right. They couldn't stop him. But if he was fully transparent, I don't think he's going to say that because
you know what?
He's got guys in the locker room.
That's BS,
right?
Dude. I mean, hold on a second. Yeah. Solomon Wilcox, yeah. I want to stop you here and say that because it was a wet day. The ball could pop out. You give all this money to these ball hawks who take their chances. The ball was going to go up in the air. I mean, look, Calais Campbell's covering for the kid, Owa, who tackled the guy when the defense coordinator said, don't tackle unless you could strip the ball. There's a little video of maybe the ball could have gotten nudged free or whatever, but they weren't on the same page at the end. And more than that, I for me, having it happen twice in the last 2 weeks, I'm a little concerned. And Solly, we'll talk about the backside, but the linebackers, bro, you know what I mean? Like, the linebackers are where other teams are feasting right now across the middle. Yes. And the linebackers they have, and the D-line, when they're bringing in JPP and Houston can't get on the field and Pierce is gone. I mean, they do have some injury issues, but they were deficient, that linebacking core, from training camp to Ojabo may be here by Halloween, and we're getting up on that now. Maybe he will be. Yeah. Maybe he'll be a good player. Yeah. Who knows? But they knew coming in that this could be a problem. Now it's a gaping wound right now.
Yeah, but let me just say this. There are a lot of defenses that can't cover at the linebacker position, at the mid-level area. Listen, the way teams are spreading defenses out today, it puts a greater emphasis on linebackers to be able to cover and run in space. And the way that this is, that you have to help the linebackers, because most linebackers aren't going to cover running backs and tight ends all over the field in that way. You've got to be able to, what we call, you've got to be able to push the receivers and don't allow any of that traffic over the middle of the field. You've got to be able to, what we call, close off the middle of the field. This is done by way of scheme, by way of alignment and assignment, in terms of the coverages that you're running. When you start running a lot of man-to-man and cover zero and start blitzing, you create these vulnerabilities. You don't make your defense better at the back end, because you've already emphasized that you want to get pressure on the opposing quarterback at the expense of leaving areas open on the back end. Have you ever heard of a defense where you rush three and cover and drop eight? How about doing that? Because it's harder for a quarterback to throw against that look. And so, mate, the point is, no one has a perfect roster. Everyone's got something on their offensive defense that they're trying to cover up, you see? And you've got to, by way of scheme and deployment of what talent you're given, you've got to be able to work around that. You and I both know they got rid of Don Wink Martindale because he was a blitz happy guy. He ran into this guy named Joe Burrow and he just sliced and diced him because they were a blitz heavy team. And now they're getting sliced and diced in a whole nother way. But I still think the defensive coordinator is trying to learn the players. I think the players were trying to learn, okay, a new way of doing things. But you and I both know the Ravens are at the crossroads here of this great sort of philosophy that they've always had, this great defensive culture that they've always had. And now there's a changing of the guard, the mindset, the way that they're even trying to play defense and going about it. Right now, they've embarked upon a new road. And what you're seeing is some growing pains.
Solomon Wilcott's always the wisdom down in Cincinnati. We get together with him a couple times a year, usually at the Super Bowl, sometimes all season. He's always doing something great with research and doctors and former players because he's one of the good dudes. Bring me some chili here this weekend as well. Solly, you said to him, Marvin Lewis taught me all this back in the day. Alignment, assignment. Good. Okay, we're aligned. We're communicating. We got veterans. We got the right guy with the helmet on. Chuck knows what he's doing. He's running around as a fourth linebacker or whatever you would want to call it. And we're aligned, and we know, okay, you got him, you got him, you got him. All right, who's got Tariq Hill? I mean, it doesn't matter, alignment, assignment, technique, and whether
– they're blowing the alignment and assignment. We haven't even gotten to the technique yet. Who's covering that guy? Well, I thought you had him. Well, I thought you had him. So you see what I'm – that's the communication piece.
Right.
And you've got – look, you got a new safety in Marcus Williams. You got a young safety in Kyle Hamilton. Who's quarterbacking in this new system? I think they were all feeling good about – remember, every year that they would change coordinators – it was always someone who had already been previously with the team. It was always someone who kind of had came up in their system, right?
And they always had a Terrell Suggs to give it to a Mosley, to a Bradley.
That's right.
They always had captains on them. I mean, I guess that's what Calais is here for, right?
But he can't play back there. He's not back there.
Sure.
So I'll give you something that Dick LeBeau taught me since I was a player. And it's something that still lives with me today. He said, there's two positions on a football team that get you beat faster than any of the others. Because you can have a breakdown anywhere, you're going to lose. But these two positions, you have a breakdown, it's immediate in terms of the impact at quarterback and defensive back. Because if you screw up on the back end, you know what the officials are back there doing? They're doing this. It's a touchdown. And you saw that in Miami. You saw that
Set of the players here 40 years later, not to, you know, your era or any other era, but watching these guys and the way Lamar can throw a football off his back foot like a slingshot. With accuracy in the back way these guys can catch a ball with one. I mean, it's become the Harlem Globetrotters on every team, literally, right?
So you don't have to worry about losing games at the quarterback position. But I remember I did a lot of Baltimore's games. And I remember before, say, Flacco came to town in between Trent Dilfer and Elvis Gerbach, before you got the Flecko. I remember the Stony Cases of the world.
You want me to go through them all? You want Jeff Blake, Scott Mitchell? Keep going. Yeah. Let's go. Right so on.
My point is, you had a defense. You had Priest Holmes in the backfield, but you had no quarterback. And look, it was glaring. You were going nowhere because that position gets you beat. And now on the back end, even though you have talent, because it's not playing cohesively in a coherent, communicative fashion, is getting you beat. You can be hurting on the offensive line, or you can be hurting in your backfield at the running back position, or maybe at the linebacker. You can overcome those things. You can overcome them, but not when the quarterback is deficient, which the Ravens don't have that problem because you have a great quarterback. But the secondary right now is getting you beat, and that you have to get that fixed.
Solomon Wilcott's got some wisdom here on the Cincinnati Bengals, who are the defending AFC champions. I have to say that because they are.
It's true.
We've watched you guys play a little bit here. Thursday Night Football, been a little choppy, right? I mean, I think the whole leagues, other than Philadelphia, where they had a parade last week, about to have another one this week, right? I love October parades. They don't lead to much, winning Monday Night Football in October. But I would say to you, from where I sit watching this, they're the team to beat, not just for the Ravens, but I think to some degree for me, they're still the defending champions. And this should be a better effort for them, having gone through what they went through last year, and certainly having a leader like Burrow. I mean, I fear Joe Burrow as a Baltimore Ravens fan in the way that Peyton Manning destroyed that division for a decade. I feel like this kid's not going. He's already been hurt, came back and went to the Super Bowl and came one pass away from winning it, right? So I think you're the sleeping giant in the white uniforms and all, and little Cincinnati and all, but I don't view this the same way. And I think you're the best team in the division. I do.
Yeah, and the slow start is attributed to the fact that Joe Burrow has to do things the hard way. You know, he went through the offseason training, deal, and he had a really good offseason because he was healthy. Instead of rehabbing, he was able to practice. And then as soon as he reports to training camp, he has an appendectomy. he has to have surgery and have a body part removed, an organ removed. And that set him back because he wasn't able to practice through training camp, didn't play at all in the preseason. Just because everybody can tell you on an offensive line, just because you get four or five new guys, you still have to rep it out and develop some chemistry together. And so it took him a couple of weeks. You could see that, giving up the, 13 sacks in the first 5 weeks of the season. And then it got better week three. You see them getting better week four. And now they're starting to come into their own. So they're going through their growing pains as well. But that appendectomy really did set the offense back. Quiet as it's kept, the defense has been playing really well. They've given up only four touchdowns in four games so far this season. So that's the real critical piece. Now, I do believe that whenever you're playing against Lamar Jackson, he's a different kind of equation. I don't care how good your defense is, matching up with Lamar is going to take any defense outside of their comfort zone, and they're going to have to play well, but they're going to have to play well differently because he presents a different formula, a different problem to solve. And in that sense, I don't care what your defense has done in the past, it's different when you have to stop Lamar Jackson.
Look, you blow a couple of games and three touchdown leads at home to, you know, a place like Buffalo where you'd have to go and play in January now out in the cold and whatever. We don't talk – the Lamar contract thing lasted 8 months until they're 2-2, and I haven't talked about it all week, but I must ask you while you're here what it's like to be a player in that position with the union, without an aid. I mean, all the stuff we know about Lamar and – well, we have a body of work, right? We have a quarter of a season where, okay, the team's been this or that, and he threw the pick in the back of the end zone on fourth down, no bueno at all. But we've seen a kid here that bigger, stronger, smarter, faster, you know, not more talented, always been talented, but really moving to another place on where people in Cincinnati all over the league talk about Lamar Jackson in a way that they didn't even talk about Ray Lewis because he's here. He's on the field, he's electrifying, and he's unsigned.
He's a superstar, is what he is. Lamar Jackson is must-see TV. Anytime he steps onto that field, you cannot turn your head, you cannot walk away. Because what he's doing, he's on a trajectory to throw for over 4,000 yards and rush for 1,000. Never before been done in the history of our league. He's on a trajectory to potentially be an MVP award winner yet again. And every single week, it seems like the price tag goes up, to be honest with you. I mean, the guy is a phenomenal player. Here's the problem. I think most people believe that there's one way to play the quarterback position, and they'll hold up Tom Brady or they'll hold up Peyton Manning and say, be like him. Be like Aaron Rodgers. Why don't you listen? This guy, no one is like Lamar Jackson, but yet he wins. He gets results. Of the quarterbacks in this draft class, he's the first one to win an MVP. He was the last one to get drafted in the first round, first one to win league MVP. He was the last quarterback selected that year in the first round, but he's the first one to take his team to multiple postseason appearances and wins when he gets there. So, look, I think we have to be more understanding and say, hey, look, let him play the way that he plays. When Joe Burrow doesn't take big marketing or endorsement contracts, everybody looks at him and says, here's a guy that's studious, that's intent on doing it the right way. You need to go out and win first before you sign these big deals to do all these endorsement deals. Well, Lamar Jackson's done the same thing, and no one's given him credit for that. No one's given him credit for putting the work first and the fame behind all of that. Everyone wants to point, oh, he doesn't have an agent. You know how many players negotiate their own contracts around this league? DeAndre Hopkins was the first wide receiver to negotiate. And he had the largest average annual salary for the last 2 to 3 years before Tyreek Hill got his deal. And DeAndre Hopkins negotiated that deal himself with the Arizona Cardinals. I think we underestimate players today. I think we want to put them in a box and we want them to be like everybody else because that's what we know. That's what we understand. As soon as someone comes down the pike and they do things differently, they play differently, they look differently, we get afraid. They're going to change our game. They're going to make us do something we don't want to do. They're going to make us pay more than we would like to pay for that style of play. Yeah, grow up, understand that the product is really good. What Lamar Jackson is giving us as football fans, we've never seen it before. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. So, look, you know, there's no doubt that everyone in the Ravens organization love Lamar Jackson. I think they fully support him. I think ultimately they know they're going to have to pay, and they're going to have to pay big. They really are.
Selma Wilcox is our guest. We often disagree from Cincinnati to Baltimore, but we can agree on a lot of things and good friendships and people like Coach Billick and Marvin and all that. But one thing we always agree on is it's always a good opportunity to PP on Pittsburgh and Cleveland while we're together here. And this seems like a really good opportunity to do that, right? So I would just say this. This is a matchup here, Sunday Night Football, you know, Collinsworth, all that, all the hype, last game of the day. These are the two best teams in the division. I'd say this right here. Cleveland and Pittsburgh can't win the division, right? I mean, can we say that out loud, or is that too crazy to say that? I see no scenario where they can win the division, either one of them.
Well, it's clearly the Steelers are embarking upon a new era, right? They're finding what it's like to not have that franchise quarterback. Now, we don't know if Kenny Pickett will become that, but we know as we sit here today, they're in the midst of trying to transition and find out if he is. And with that being an X factor, an unknown part of the equation, I don't know that you can rightly predict that they are in the running for potentially winning the AFC North division. The Cleveland Browns, I do think once Deshaun Watson is inserted into the lineup and gets back to, if he can, get back to who he was with the Texans, then I think we're going to be able to look at them quite differently. But they're not there yet, right? They're not. So, there's no doubt. I think it's the Ravens. And to me, It's because of Lamar Jackson. And for the Bengals, it's because of Joe Burrow. When you have that player at that position, you can expect to be knocking on the door to win a division title, to go to the playoffs. These players are transcendent players. They're superstar players. They're leaders that everyone else rallies around. You take Lamar Jackson off the Baltimore Ravens, tell me who are they? And tell me, would you be interested in watching them?
Well, they were 0-0 in November and 0-0 in December. We saw that show last year.
There
right?
you go. And you tell me who the Bengals are without Joe Burrow. I can tell you right now, no one wants to find out. Not for a long time, right? So, yeah, you're right. These are the two teams. It'll be good to watch them play on Sunday night. Joe Burrow has made the city of Cincinnati a promise. Once they punched the ticket and won the division last year, he said, get used to this. We're going to be doing this a lot from here on out, and I believe them.
I ask you a lot of questions you have the answers to, and it's all predetermined. We give each other the script, but this is off script. This is your charity thing. This will be the hardest question I ask you. All right, I told you before we started, now you're doing 10 things. Just give me one good thing you're involved in right now that makes the world a better place, you can tell our audience, because you're always doing something.
You know, I'm involved with a company now. It's called Fountain Life, and it's about preventative medicine. It really is about diagnostic screening, early detection. Most of us who've been fortunate enough to be successful in our lives, we could not do that if we didn't have good health. You know that. You've had family members who've dealt with health issues. You've been a caregiver for your lovely wife in that way, and you know how taxing it could be.
My back hurts right now, Solly. I had an L4, L5.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get to be our age, something hurts every day. Something, right?
And I'm there with you. But Fountain Life is creating healthcare centers around the country where people can go in and you can get the diagnostics for screening, for neurology, for spine, for your back problems. But it's really about early detection for cancer, whether or not you're getting your calcium score for plaquing in your arteries or in the heart. so that we can prevent heart attacks, so that we can prevent strokes, that we can prevent high blood pressure. It's all about being proactive and making sure that you're getting the diagnostic screening that's needed to help you to avoid a lot of the health problems that tend to plague us later in life.
Solly, I appreciate you. You always make time for us. At some point, we'll share a bowl of chili down there in Cincinnati and maybe even a little playoff football, maybe, right? I mean, that would be interesting, right? A little Ravens Bengals in January. That would be, is that unprecedented? I think it is unprecedented. Is that, well, Marvin came in here now? Maybe no. I was always used to Marvin. Now I'm thinking about it. 26 years, you got me thinking.
A lot of time has gone by, hasn't it, Ness?
Well, I mean, so much so you guys are wearing white jerseys right now. So I don't know what to make of all this.
And winning.
You know, I'm just glad that I didn't throw you all the way back to say Solomon's so old that he wore Bengal on his helmet, but you came in a little later than that. Just a little later than that.
Keep doing great work out there
with your folks, okay? Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Ness. All the best. Take care.
If he were here, he'd be first guy I'd be having a Maryland Crab Cake Tour stop with. Solomon Wilcox down in Cincinnati. We'll get the Crab Cake Tour back out on the road next week, all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Goodwill. I got my Goodwill gear on. And Win Donation, where you buy two, you get two free. It's 866-90-NATION. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. No one getting you ready for the big game against the Cincinnati Bengals like we are. Stay with us. We're BaltimorePositive.com.